All right. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of This Conversation Rocks. I'm Diane.
And I'm Todd, coming to you from a dumpy little room in downtown Fort Worth, Texas.
And we're actually going to name this week's podcast episode in honor of that dumpy little room in downtown Dallas, Texas. This week's episode is...
A worthless drawer and a really big handle.
Otherwise known as part two of H's for Healthcare.
In which hopefully this week we're going to talk about what Obamacare isn't.
Right. So we're going to try to get through act two and act three. Hopefully we'll do that so people don't have to listen to week three of us ranting about healthcare. And we're going to talk about what the Affordable Care Act didn't do, and then just talk a little bit about kind of some personal reflections on the Affordable Care Act.
That sounds really good.
That's my plan.
Okay. All right. Well, are we ready to get started on Act 1?
Okay.
Act 2.
Yeah, Act 2. So I thought that we could talk a little bit about single payer, because that's really what I think some of us, at least, were hoping that the Affordable Care Act was going to be. And that's really what the Affordable Care Act didn't do.
And what exactly is single-payer healthcare?
Well, my friend, let me get to one of my favorite websites that I actually became aware of when the whole Affordable Care Act thing first started to go down. So there is actually a group called Physicians for a National Health Program, if you can believe that. There are actually physicians out there with a conscience.
I know. Bitter.
Just a little. Hopefully we don't have any physician listeners, or if we do, they're open-minded. So there are about 20,000 physicians who are members of this group, and there are other healthcare providers and citizen members of this group as well. And basically their purpose is to get us to single payer. So their definition of single payer, which is not terribly long, so I'm going to read it, is as follows. Single-payer national health insurance, also known as Medicare for All, is a system in which a single payer or quasi-public agency organizes healthcare financing, but the delivery of care remains largely in private hands. Under a single-payer system, all residents of the U.S. would be covered for all medically necessary services, including doctor / healthcare provider, that's my addition, hospital, preventive, long-term care, mental health, reproductive health care, dental, vision, prescription drug, and medical supply costs. The program would be funded by the savings obtained from replacing today's inefficient, profit-oriented, multiple insurance payers with a single streamlined nonprofit public payer, and by modest new taxes based on ability to pay. Premiums would disappear, 95% of all households would save money, patients would no longer face financial barriers to care such as copays and deductibles, and would regain free choice of doctor and hospital. Doctors would regain autonomy over patient care. And they actually sponsored a bill called H.R. 676 that was based on their proposal published in the Journal for American, or the, I'm sorry, the Journal of the American Medical Association, that describes their proposition for Medicare for All in greater detail. But that's basically what it is. They're proposing that we get rid of the insurance system that we currently have and replace it with a single payer, a single insurance plan that we're all covered by.
I can't imagine why anybody thinks this is a bad idea.
Well, so I've been thinking about this a lot, and this actually ties in a little bit with the Neil Gaiman quote that I want to end with tonight. And I think part of it is that you start talking about single payer and people start hearing the word socialism and they start freaking out.
I realize that. And it's crazy because my parents obviously are on Medicare because they're the age.
Right.
And they can get Medicare. And my stepfather has Alzheimer's. And I'm here to tell you, because of Medicare, he has gotten some of the best treatment you possibly can get for Alzheimer's. And I have no way, you know, including clinical trials, you know, medication, everything else, right? And there is no way that you could convince me that he could have gotten this through insurance.
Well, you know, and here's what I want to say. Your kids go to a public school. You drive on a publicly maintained road. bitch, you got socialism.
Yeah. I mean, the truth of the matter is there's a lot of socialism in the United States, contrary to what people believe. You know, like you said, public education is a great example of that. And despite its flaws, the thing with public education is we attempt to educate every child in this country. That's not a bad thing.
I got a great public education.
I did too.
I mean, I think, and I can't say that I believe that the kids here in Alaska are necessarily getting the quality of education these days that I got, but I got some fantastic, we're talking college level classes in high school.
Oh, sure. And it absolutely still exists.
Absolutely.
You know, my nephew is currently enrolled in several AP classes, you know, as a sophomore in high school. My other nephew who's graduating in a few weeks, I guess, high school, you know, finished several college level classes and everything. So yeah, public education, which we could have a whole separate podcast on,
right,
may have some issues and stuff, but the bottom line is we do try to educate every kid in this country, and that's not a bad thing. And tying that back to Medicare for All, that wouldn't be a bad thing either. We would attempt to help everybody in this country, regardless of your income, and get you taken care of, be it a broken bone, mental illness, cancer, whatever. And, by the way, I just want to say that this in no way would prevent anybody who actually had serious money from doing what they do anyway, which is contract with specialists on their own outside of the insurance system anyway.
Right, and that happens in other countries that have single-payer systems. You know, there are places where people who are really wealthy contract outside of that system with private providers for what they want, and that's fine.
Absolutely, because the story that everybody always tells is that, oh, you know, these rich guys from England, which has socialist medicine,
right,
or Canada, you know, they come here to see American doctors. Well, they're not coming here to see the American doctors that you and I get to see because of our insurance programs.
Excellent
They're
point.
Coming to see the top 1% at the Mayo Clinic or whatever.
The people that you and I are never going to see.
Yeah, not unless we got something so rare and spectacular that somebody really wants to write up a case study on us.
Exactly. So, the other thing that this site does, and this site actually has a lot of great information. And just so, I didn't put up a link last night, but I will. It's www.pnhp.org. Another thing that it does at their section where they just give a definition of single payer, they actually do a brief comparison between single payer and the Affordable Care Act. And they point out that as of 2023, under the Affordable Care Act, about 30 people will still be uninsured, as opposed to single-payer would insure everyone.
I'm sorry, you said 30. You meant something bigger than 30.
No, 30 million, sorry.
Because honestly, right, if Obamacare got us everybody but 30, it would actually be a success.
It'd be a win, right. Yeah. The other thing that they point out is that insurance companies are going to continue to strip down policies, maintain restrictive networks, limit and deny care, and increase co-pays and deductibles and other out-of-pocket costs, which
because
I have to... Oh, go
no,
ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, because that's exactly what they've been doing now for a long time.
I was just going to tell you, and so we're a couple of years into the Affordable Care Act being implemented, and I'm already seeing that. So I'm seeing...
But what you're really seeing is actually just the ongoing trend, right, which has been going on for over 20 years now.
Right, but patients who signed up for the Affordable Care Act kind of had this delusion of, woohoo, now I've got insurance, and everything's going to be golden, and now they're coming back under year two, and their premiums are a little higher, their coverage isn't so great, and their deductible is a heck of a lot bigger.
Right.
Which is nothing that the Affordable Care Act did. You're exactly right. That's just the way the insurance companies play the game.
Yep, and it sucks.
And unfortunately, we, as a nation, didn't recognize that allowing the insurance companies to stay in the game allowed them to continue to manipulate the game in that way.
Right. Because the insurance companies are for-profit organizations.
Right.
They exist solely to make a profit. And if what you do is provide insurance, which would then pay off for people who are sick or hurt, you have to come up with a way to limit your payout, otherwise you would make no money.
Right. And so what single payer in large part is doing, or what Medicare for All in large part is trying to do, is eliminate the idea that healthcare should be a for-profit venture.
No, actually what they're trying to do, let me say my opinion on it, which would be more that what they're trying to do is eliminate the profit of an insurance company from healthcare.
Very good. That's actually probably a better way to say it.
Because doctors are still going to get paid.
Right.
Nurse practitioners are still going to get paid. Specialists are still going to make more money than everybody else. None of that is going to change just because we go to a single payer system.
And I'm sure there are people who listen to our podcast who don't like Michael Moore. But I got to tell you, I watched the movie Sicko when it first came out. I own a copy. And I'll never forget the interview with that doc in Canada who says, you know what? I make a great living. I have a really comfortable living. And he's working in a single-payer system.
Right.
And it goes back to my rant last week, which is, how many cars can you drive? How many vacations can you take? You know, there's got to be a point at which we limit greed.
Right, but I mean, greed isn't even really on the part of the doctors and nurses.
Oh, don't even count the nurses in greed. They don't make that much money.
what I'm saying, though, is that in the health, providing health care, there are a certain percentage who are very wealthy from it.
Right.
But most physicians make a good living. And in fact, almost all of you guys would make a better living if you didn't have to pay out your money to staff and do your billing with the most fucked up insurance codes ever.
Oh my God. And they're only going to get worse. People don't know it yet, but right now we're operating under a system called ICD-9, the International Coding, can't remember what the D stands for.
Dysfunction.
There you go. And we're about to go into ICD-10, which is going to make it even more nitpicky and complicated than it already is.
And it's worth noting that it serves no purpose for the coding to be as complicated as it is.
Except to give the insurance companies an excuse to deny care.
Exactly. And actually, they're not even denying care at that point, right? What they're going to do is they're going to deny payment.
Right.
And then, so...
Yeah, so you get the care, but you also get the bill.
Right.
And then, you don't know until 2 or 3 months down the road that you got stuck with the bill.
Right. And then, if you're lucky, you're able to go back to your provider, and the provider is able to figure out that, oh, under IC9, soon to be ICD-10, I should have coded it this way and kick it back off. And then the insurance company goes, oh, okay, then we'll pay it. But they may not, because it may turn out that the care was never covered, no matter how you code it. And
that can also be tricky, because we can actually get tagged for... It's not even falsifying coding, but if they decide that you're manipulating the coding too much... You can get tapped and busted for that, even if you are being honest about how you're coding something.
Right.
So it's very tricky.
And this all has to do with the fact that the incentive, it's all about incentives, right? Everything is about incentives. And the incentive for the healthcare insurance companies is to pay out as little as possible.
Right.
To maximize their profits, pay their shareholders or their management. Or whatever, you know, however it's going to get divvied up, you know, but that's their incentive.
And again, when you go back and if you would go back and look at Sicko or watch Sicko, there are interviews with people who are whistleblowers on the insurance companies. And they say, I was given incentives for how many cases I could deny, how many cases I could decline.
Right. And
that's how they got their bonuses.
And that only makes sense when you think that your incentive maximize your profit, and the only way you can do that is to minimize your payout.
Right. So a couple other things I wanted to say just about the healthcare hearings in 2009, and I did post this link. We actually did not even allow single-payer advocates to sit at the table during the hearings about the Affordable Care Act. And I actually went back and found a link to an article on Huffington Post. There were protesters from Physicians for a National Healthcare Plan and a group called Single Payer Now who were arrested and removed from the hearings on the Affordable Care Act.
Welcome to America.
Right. So not only did we not even look at single payer, we didn't even let those people have an opinion at the table. The people,
right.
it was all congressional hacks and insurance company representatives talking about our quote unquote reform of the healthcare system.
Well, I believe, as Bill Maher put it, in the end, wasn't this just a big blowjob for the insurance companies?
That's a pretty good description of it.
You know, so if that's our starting point for what we just got, we might have missed the mark just a little bit.
Well, and so the other great thing about the PNHP website is that they have their latest news and their news release section. And so I just wanted to share a couple of brief things from that. So on their health affairs blog, this goes back to the discussion of Medicaid expansion that we had last week. There was some research done jointly by Harvard and the City University of New York. And that the research was released actually about a year ago. And it looks like they estimate that somewhere between 7,000 and 17,000 people will die as a result, annually, as a result of the states that opt out from Medicaid expansion that's offered under the Affordable Care Act.
I got nothing.
Yeah. I've got more. Let's see. And then, you know, one of the things that we were talking about as an advantage of single payer is that we get rid of the overhead in terms of paying people who do the billing. We get rid of the overhead of people who process the claims. So, you know, we're really looking at cutting a lot of administrative costs if we go to a single payment system. So this is from an article that was posted in January of this year. And it looks like medical billing paperwork and insurance-related red tape cost the U.S. economy approximately $471 billion in 2012. 80% of that is due to waste from the inefficiency of the nation's complex multi-payer way of financing care. This is not from the Physicians for National Healthcare. This is actually from the University of California, San Francisco, the City of the University of New York, their School of Public Health, and Harvard Medical School. So again, these are really respectable groups that are doing research that are coming out with these huge numbers.
And again, like everything we talk about here, it really ultimately comes down to you and me and the voters as we go into the presidential cycle.
Right.
Candidates are not going to want to talk about this because they never want to talk about this. Bernie might be talking about this, but everybody else won't want to talk about it.
I think there's a good chance that Bernie's going to talk about it. I think he may push Hillary more to the left, so she's going to be talking about it. I heard Lincoln Chafee, who was the independent governor of Rhode Island, on Bill Maher this week. He kind of casually slipped in that he was going to be announcing his candidacy for the Democratic Party. So that should make things interesting.
That is no longer the sound of inevitability.
he estimates, so he said that he's doing exploratory work right now. So who knows when he's actually going to announce, but there's potentially a third Democrat in the race. So, this is good. This is healthy.
Oh, yeah. This is great. Way better than I thought it was going to be on that front.
So going back to this article, so these schools, these universities that did this research actually estimate that if we implemented Medicare for all, we could save more than $1 trillion over 3 years just in administrative and billing costs. And what they say is such savings could be used to cover everyone who is currently uninsured and upgrade coverage for the tens of millions of Americans who now have inadequate policies with no increase in national health spending.
Absolutely. And think about what that means to you and me, the individual person. Excuse me. You know, you're employed, you have insurance through your employer. You're paying your employer some money, undoubtedly, at this point.
Right.
You know, unless you're very lucky and have a very good employer. But, you know, especially if you got a family on your plan, you are paying every month. And all that money could actually be used for something a little more useful.
So I've got to be honest. We're lucky. We're insured through the state of Alaska. And Nick was able to buy back into one of the very original state insurance plans because of his service to the state of Alaska many years ago. So we have really good insurance. And not many people can say that anymore. Most of the people I know are paying huge monthly payments for their plans. They have big deductibles and big copays. So I think about them when I'm thinking about $1 trillion over 3 years.
Right. And basically, that would be the rest of us.
Right. I mean, I can't imagine that as someone who is self-employed, that you have a great deal on your healthcare plan.
I'm lucky I have a wife who is employed and has health insurance, and that's where my health insurance comes from currently. When my company expands, it's going to be difficult for me to be able to afford healthcare insurance for my employees.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's another nut that I'm trying to crack right now. But
so one more piece of news from the PNHP, and then we can move on. I thought this was really good, too. So this was posted in March of this year, another study. This comes from also from the City University of New York's School of Public Health and from Harvard Medical School. So they're really leading the front, they're really leading in terms of this research. So this is a study that looked at the Affordable Care Act's requirement that insurers spend at least 80 to 85% of premiums on actual Medicare, on actual medical delivery of care. We talked about that last week, remember?
Right.
And we said that we weren't really sure how they were going to measure that. Well, it turns out it's absolutely not happening. So,
how bad is it?
Let's see. Despite claims by the Obama administration that the Affordable Care Act will reduce insurance companies' spending on overhead, thereby channeling a greater share of consumers' premium dollars into actual patient care, insurers' financial filings show the law has no impact on the percentage of insurer expenditures on things such as administration, marketing, and profits. So basically, let's see.
Fail.
The researchers found that the weighted average MLR, which is medical loss ratio, the actual spending on payments to doctors, hospitals, and pharmacies, the average weighted MLR in the 3 years after the new regulations took effect was 83.05%, compared to 83.04% in the 3 years prior to the reform. There's no difference. There's no difference. There is 0.01% difference.
Well, success right there, baby.
So that's depressing.
Yeah, it is.
So, what I always tell people is I was not necessarily for or against the Affordable Care Act. I just felt that it didn't go far enough. Because I know that there are still tons of people out there who are uninsured. I know that there are still tons of people out there who chose not to sign up for the Affordable Care Act plans because it was cheaper for them to be fined than it was for them to pay for a health insurance plan. And this is exactly what, sadly, is being borne out in a lot of cases.
Right. Right. So, does that lead us right into Act 3, what Obamacare isn't?
both got talents yet to discover. So let's buckle down, get to work, help you recover. So I put my hand against your head. I recommend that you stay in bed. Your temperature is getting pretty high. I'll help you get undressed.
Okay, hey, welcome back to
Act 3.
What the heck episode is this, anyway?
I think we're still technically in episode 10, which is act 2 and 3 of episode 9.
Is it really episode 9?
Okay. It's really episode 9. And I just want to warn people that it is spring in Alaska, and it is the Wild Kingdom tonight, or as Jello Biafra once said in reference to Ronald Reagan, the Mild Kingdom. So, basically, I'm alone. I have a sick dog, I have a dog that got beat up in a dog fight, and I've got three puppies, so anything could happen. You'll probably hear lots of growling on my end, and some of it may be coming from me.
Okay. Yeah.
So, we finished up talking about what national healthcare is and what single payer is. And we talked quite a bit about the Physicians for a National Healthcare Program. And then we were going to talk a little bit about some of what we've seen as far as some of the pitfalls of the Affordable Care Act as it's happening now. That's basically what we were going to go into as far as Act 3 goes.
Okay. So let's do it. Act 3. Here we go.
Okay. So, you know, when I think about Act 3, I think about a lot of personal stories. I think about things that I've seen over the last several years providing healthcare as a primary care provider as the Affordable Care Act has come into play. And a couple of things that leap out right away is that dental and vision and hearing are still not covered under most healthcare plans for people. I actually have had people say that you have to be rich to get dental care in the United States. And, you know, that's more and more true. I don't know what it's like in California, but dental care in Alaska is incredibly expensive.
Generally speaking, employer-provided insurance for dental is not all that great in my experience. I mean, you know, somebody might have great dental, but just in my experience, I don't have it. Basically, pay for the annual checkup and 80% on the cavities if you need fillings, and like less than 50% if you've seriously screwed yourself up.
Right. So basically, if you need a root canal or a crown, you're going to get maybe part of one paid for.
Yep.
Yeah. That's about what it is up here. I think I was telling you last week that I have a friend who goes and sees a dentist in Mexico, and she will go and have a nice long vacation in Mexico, get her dental care done there, and she actually comes out ahead. And she gets good quality dental care.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, so
maybe that's what we need to do. We're all going to Mexico.
We're going to meet up in Mexico. It'll be a This Conversations Rocks meet up in Mexico for dental care. I run into a lot of seniors who have a hard time affording hearing aids. Vision is a little better if I can refer people under a specific condition. Like a diabetic person should have a diabetic eye exam every year, so I can refer them under that condition and at least get a good vision exam, if nothing else.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, again, you know, employer-provided vision is generally pretty lackluster. Again, in my experience, not saying that it's in all cases.
No, but we talked about that, too.
I definitely haven't bothered for many years because what little gets covered isn't worth the premium.
Yeah, ours definitely took a big hit. They changed coverage, and ours is definitely not as high quality as it has been in years past. So we took a big bite for the cost of our vision care. And we're both pretty well screwed if we don't have glasses or contact lenses.
We all work on computers, so who exactly isn't screwed?
Right,
about vision coverage at some point, right?
Oh, man, and I got to tell you, I have definitely gotten to the place where I'm taking my glasses off. I'm putting them back on. I need to
take
them.
Yeah, it's lovely. Lovely,
oh,
isn't it?
God, it's horrible. Anytime over the age of 40, man. I mean, I have to put them on to see this. I have to take them off if I want to look at that mole to make sure that I need to really take that mole off. It's just, it's terrible. I could bitch all night about the whole glasses thing. I still haven't adjusted to that. This is the first year that it's been really tough. So, but anyway, yeah, so those are our three things that I see as flaws right away, is that those are still major areas that aren't covered well.
Right. Well, and I mean, you know, probably the single most glaring flaw is the fact that it doesn't apply to the middle class in general, everybody. You know, the Affordable Care Act certainly is not helping out all of us. Helping out a segment which needed to be helped, but
right,
you know, a true government giveaway, no,
well,
but a truly decent government program might actually help all of us instead of just a segment.
And I don't know if you saw it, but basically in like 6 minutes in the Alaska legislature, the Medicaid expansion was killed.
Six minutes. And this pisses me off because it always goes back to the same thing, right? Red states. You guys are taking more from the federal government than you're contributing. In other words, you're the takers. You guys with your Tea Party fucking dreams, like Kansas and Alaska. Well, you guys probably aren't quite as bad as Kansas, but
oh,
Kansas
no.
is on the verge of fucking bankruptcy. Why? Because they're going to cut all the taxes and that's going to suddenly create all this economic expansion, except it never has.
You know what?
Ever.
Here's the thing, though, and this is going to piss a lot of people off. We're worse than Kansas because we've got that huge permanent fund, all of our oil money just sitting there, and we dole little dribs and drabs out to the population every year. But if we really took that money and did something meaningful with it, we could educate people, we could pay for people's health care, we really could do something meaningful with it. And I'm not lying. I know you're not. I like getting my permanent fund dividend. Don't get me wrong. I mean,
yeah. What was the payout last year?
The payout last year, I think, was $1,800 a person. And you know what? It paid for my horse's dental and all of their shots. Which let me tell you, it's not cheap.
No, exactly right.
It was
$1,000
to have the vet come out and do their shots and their teeth.
There's something apropos about the Alaska Permanent Fund is actually the healthcare.
For my horses.
For animals, right?
You know, and the other thing is it paid for the year's worth of hay for them, which, again, not cheap. But would I rather pay for that on my own and have the vast permanent fund doing something better for our state? Yeah, so in a way, that makes us worse than all of the other red states put together because we have the money. We have the money and we're still slashing programs.
Yep.
Actually took care of.
Oh,
go ahead.
Still taking more from the federal government than the blue states.
I know.
Hey, go fuck yourself, Alaska.
I actually took care of someone today who works at the university in Anchorage, and she told
my
me
alma mater.
Mine too, and she told me that they just got word that the governor is going to be laying off a whole bunch of employees. And that's probably quote-unquote temporary until our budget issues get worked out. But there you go. We've got this gigantic fund of oil money sitting out there, and we're laying off educators.
I got nothing.
And I know H isn't for education, but since we're talking about money and since we're talking about takers...
God.
So... Yeah, so...
So anyway, the flaw, going back, right, wrapping back around, the flaws with the Affordable Care Act are A, dental, B, vision, C, hearing, D, oh, doesn't apply to everybody in a meaningful way.
Right.
Is not single payer. Insurance companies are still getting rich off of it. So, in the ultimate scheme of things, it was kind of a minor adjustment. So why the fuck does everybody hate it so much?
Well, because, gee, a black Democrat was the person who was responsible for signing it into law. I mean, I hate to put too fine a point on it, but if you had called it Romney Care, which is actually what it is.
Because it's based completely based off of what Romney got passed through
Massachusetts.
The state of Massachusetts when he was governor.
Right.
And then later opposed.
I mean, I think I said this to you before, and I can't remember if I said it in our last episode or not, but there have truly been studies done where it gets posed to people, introduced to people as the Affordable Care Act. It gets introduced to people as Obamacare, and they're like, I hate that Obamacare. And then you talk to them about it as the Affordable Care Act, and they're okay with it.
Oh, right, of course, because the bottom line is most people who are opposed to it are getting the red meat for the masses bullshit from Fox News.
Right.
You know, which isn't making any attempt to actually educate people as to what the Affordable Care Act was or was not.
Right.
I am reminded of the gentleman at the Tea Party rally several years ago with his sign that said, Hitler called and he wants his communism back. Way to miss it on all points.
That is so funny. let's see. There were a couple other things. Oh,
fuck it. Let's just go after Republicans the rest of the hour.
But we're trying not to do that. We're trying to, well, we're not really trying to be fair and balanced, but.
Fuck no, man. We're not Fox News. We're not lying about it.
But, you know, there were some other things that I did want to address truly meaningfully about things that bug me about the Affordable Care Act. And,
sure.
And one of them is that, so supposedly there is supposed to be mental health parity, which means...
Right, right. I remember you talking about this.
Right, which means that mental health gets paid for, mental health coverage gets paid for the same way that any other kind of healthcare condition gets covered. And I'm still not seeing that. I'm seeing a lot of plans that don't cover any kind of behavioral health treatment. So someone can come to me for an antidepressant, but they can't go see a counselor or a psychiatrist for any kind of counseling or other kinds of treatment. And I haven't figured out how the insurance companies are skirting around that. So if anybody out there knows, if anybody's got feedback, I'd be really interested to hear that because it's incredibly frustrating. I think I've probably cited this number on the program before, but, you know, the studies show 40% of people who do meds get better, 40% of people who do counseling get better, 80% of people who do meds and counseling together get better. So the stats really show that you want to do both modalities, medications and behavioral health therapy. And I'm not figuring out how these insurance companies are getting away with only providing half treatment.
Well,
I mean, really, it's in the law that they're supposed to provide behavioral health. So I'm not figuring out how they're skirting the law.
Right.
And another place, and we talked a little bit about this, is that they're supposed to provide preventive health. They're supposed to provide a yearly preventive health exam. And some of the insurance plans aren't covering that. And I haven't figured out how they're skirting that. So there's still big gaps, and those are not just affordable healthcare plans. Those are people with insurance plans that have come on the market not just as a part of the Affordable Healthcare Act.
Right.
And another thing, and I think I probably mentioned this, but this drives me nuts. So I've seen people who have had their plans basically turn into major medical plans. So their deductibles are so high that it's not affordable for them to come to the office. I mean, they thought they were getting an insurance plan. They thought they were going to be able to come in for, you know, that sinus infection or to have that ingrown toenail treated or whatever. And they're basically in the same boat that they were before, but now they're paying a premium for a health plan that basically just covers if they have a huge medical disaster.
Right. Again, you know, it's all about what this thing really doesn't do. And in the end, there's so much that it doesn't do.
Right. So, and I think, you know, one of the other stories that I wanted to relate, and then I wanted to talk a little bit about the fines versus, you know, the decision that people would make not to get insurance under the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
So I had a really funny story, and I told you this the last time that we attempted to record this, and I swear to God, I actually have room on my flash drive this time.
No, no, we're all good this time. We're totally good. We know it.
So I had a patient who was really, really sick, who had treatment, including surgeries, as a part of Medicaid coverage, and this patient is actually losing Medicaid coverage this year because his income is higher than what's allowed. And so I'm going to go back to talking about the patient that I had who had really serious health problems and who had surgery and several other lengthy treatment courses under Medicaid. Basically, his care was covered under Medicaid, and he's actually losing his Medicaid this year, and he's holding off buying a plan under the Affordable Care Act because he's convinced that it's going to go away. And he actually was telling me what a good thing it is that that's going to go away. And I was just thinking how ironic it is that he's kind of bought the story, that he's drinking the Kool-Aid, that it's totally okay to have Medicaid, right, but the Affordable Care Act is bad.
Right.
Or that anything like the Affordable Care Act is bad.
Right.
I don't know. It just makes me crazy. You know, it's the same people who will sit in the office telling me they can't afford their medication, they can't afford to come in and see me, but Medicare is evil, the Affordable Care Act is evil, Medicaid is evil, people are a bunch of takers, but they can't afford what they need. And it just makes me kind of crazy.
Yeah, the thing is that Medicare is a pretty good program. Works out for, you know, works out pretty well for our seniors. It's not perfect, but, you know, it is something. Better than nothing. Way better than nothing.
Way better than nothing.
And yet, you know, my experience is I know a lot of seniors who completely think the Affordable Care Act is crap and is going to destroy America. Going to destroy it, I say.
You know, and I honestly think that if we turn to Medicare for All, which we talked about in Act 2, that Medicare would become an even better program. Because if we all had basically the same plan, then maybe we'd pay a little more attention to how that plan was working.
Yeah, there's some truth to that. Also, just in general terms, everything seems to indicate that it might cost us a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly would insure everybody.
$1 trillion every 3 years? I'm still obsessed with that number.
Yeah. I remember when that used to be a big number.
Yeah. So I was going to talk a little bit just about what the fines are if you choose not to purchase a plan under the Affordable Care Act, because you do get a tax fine, basically, if you decide to continue to be uninsured. There are some exemptions. So if the lowest priced plan costs more than 8% of your household income, you don't have a penalty if you choose not to buy a plan.
Right.
If you have filed a bankruptcy, if you have experienced an eviction, and I don't know, you know, within what time frame, I'm sure it's within that tax year, you don't experience a penalty for not buying a plan. And just so there's a contrast, the penalty currently for the average American family of three for not purchasing insurance is $330 in the current tax year. And truly, there are some families who are looking at hundreds of dollars a month to insure a family of three, even under the, quote, Affordable Care Act. So, right, you know, of course, it makes a lot more sense for some of those families to roll the dice and hope that nobody gets sick, you know, or to roll the dice and hope that nobody gets so seriously sick that they can't afford whatever trip to the doctor that they need to make. So, and that's actually, you know, in my opinion, another big flaw with the Affordable Care Act is that it still is, it makes more sense for some families to take the chance to not have insurance.
Right. And the whole point is that we're trying to get everybody covered.
Right.
And because if they're covered, then they don't use the emergency rooms, and everybody gets a little more preventative care, and healthcare costs go down as a rule for everybody, and all that other socialism bullshit.
And you know, that is a really good point about the emergency rooms, and I know that we talked about that a little bit before, but I think people really don't understand how much the emergency rooms are overutilized for non-emergent things. I mean, I can really, really speak to that, having worked as an emergency room nurse. And I also don't think people understand how much care actually gets written off by hospitals, that care that's delivered in the emergency rooms, because for many people, that is the place of last resort.
Yeah. It's expensive to operate. It's slow to provide you care, as anybody who's ever been in an emergency room will tell you.
Right.
And that's because it's overbooked. Completely overused.
Right. And you know, I've got to tell you, I'm sorry, his chest pain trumps your toothache every time.
Oh, sure.
Which means if you're sitting in the waiting room for 12 hours because you have a toothache, it's because a chest pain, a trauma, someone who's having difficulty breathing, and oh, by the way...
Gunshot, yes. Wound, automobile accident.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, all those things rolled in while you were waiting to get your toothache treated, which granted needs to be treated, but is not appropriately treated in an emergency room.
Right.
You know? And that unfortunately is still the reality of the American emergency room today.
Oh, sure. Sure. Because having been to the ER a few times, it's never pleasant.
Right.
You know, and you just gotta kind of grin and bear it, and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep in mind, if your thigh bone is sticking out the side of your leg, you're gonna get through pretty quick.
Right. We do tend to look at things like that, and you get to jump the line for things like that. Yeah.
They're cutting, they're letting them cut. Mom! But right, yeah. I mean, you know, so the whole point is preventative care.
Right.
And better, and access to just routine medical practice, treatment and stuff should help eliminate some of the need, because people won't get sick. Also, just being able to go to a physician instead of having to go to the ER when you've got the flu.
Right. Because, you know, and that's part of it too, because people know that generally speaking, they cannot be turned away from the emergency room. However, a clinic can say, if you don't have the money up front or if you don't have your copay, we won't see you.
Right. Yeah. Basically couched in terms of payment is expected at time of service.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. And, you know, and I get it, right? We all understand how this works and why it works the way it does. And it's because the system is set up strangely.
Well, and that's the other thing, and this is kind of my big soapbox, and I know that there are a lot of people standing on the soapbox with me, but healthcare should not be a for-profit business. Yes, we should make a living doing what we do, because, you know, I need to eat. I need to be able to pay my bills, but...
What I would say is that healthcare insurance shouldn't be a for-profit endeavor.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the truth of the matter is, I believe that everybody should make the money they can negotiate for the skill set that they have. I got no problem with that. That's America. That's capitalism. But the cost of healthcare insurance, because it is a for-profit endeavor, and their goal is to minimize their payouts so that they can maximize their profits, and that really gets in the way of delivering healthcare.
Yep, and we talked about that quite a bit last time we talked, about people who are rewarded for denying payment. Industry insiders who are rewarded for denying payment.
Yeah. All right, so what have we determined about the Affordable Care Act?
Well, so, I mean, I think, and I said this a little bit last time, but for me, the bottom line for me is that it's not single payer. You know, it was a half-hearted attempt to say, look at the change that we made. But It's not, it's more of the same, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's not a huge improvement. It is a somewhat slight improvement, and for the people who are actually covered under it, it's probably an enormous improvement.
Right. It did make, but I'm not going to lie, it did make a difference for some people. There are people today who have insurance and who now have access who did not have access before. And by the way, I have to just rant a little bit about the word access. So I have a coworker who thinks that being able to walk into a clinic means you have access. She doesn't understand that money equals access, that insurance equals access. She thinks being able to walk through the door equals access. So I just want to point out that some of us have very different definitions of access. Mine makes you, my definition means you actually get the service. So
well, we're going to go with that then.
Yeah.
I think though we just touched on something that really comes down to the heart of why the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, however you want to refer to it, is not really something that most people care that much about. And then you've got people who believe that it's, you know, the end of the universe as we know it. But it's because it didn't benefit most of the people in the middle class.
Right.
Right. Or most people don't care because it didn't matter.
Right. It didn't make a tangible change for them. And it definitely didn't make a tangible change for the upper middle class, which is where the person I just mentioned comes from. So.
Right. Because the higher up the economic chain you really are, the less, you know, this is going to impact you.
Right.
But let me be clear. It is only as socialistic as any other program that we actually have, like Medicare.
Or big schools.
Or schools. Or, you know, not having to pay for the freeways.
Or the dude who plows your streets when it snows, like it does snow up here.
Right. Or, you know, I don't know, the police showing up when you call 911, or the paramedics, or the fire department.
Because that's, you know, socialism, bitches!
Yeah, because you're not paying for it directly. It's a good, it is a good for the public good. It is a public good financed for, by, and entirely from public funds, i.e. taxes. Which, by the way, if you think that abolishing the IRS will help in any way, you're just fucking stupid.
If you think that that's going to help, you're just fucking Rand Paul.
Yeah, exactly, right? Some guy actually posted it. Some guy down in the city I live in down here, he's got that tattooed on the back of his truck, right?
What?
I support Rand Paul because he has the cojones and has promised to abolish the IRS and Obamacare.
Okay, he does realize that Rand Paul 2.0 looks more and more like your standard Republican candidate than, well, I don't know, Mitt Romney did last time around.
Yeah. I questioned all of what I was reading, but, you know, what the hell do I know? I'm not a Republican. Maybe there's a memo I missed. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, abolishing the institution that actually collects our taxes, that then funds all these programs, that just seems a little bit stupid to me. And by the way, the IRS in no way sets any of the policies that you may or may not even like. That's all set by the Congress. So if you're really upset with the way Congress is doing, vote the guys out. We're good with that. Feel free, all your red staters, vote them.
You know, all I have to say is Don Young. So for those of you who don't know, who don't follow Alaska politics, because thank God the Because Show has spread our message a little bit, so I know that there are a few people outside of Alaska and California who are listening to us. Oh my God, we still keep electing that bastard.
Don Young. What? You think butt-fucking is art? Hey, Grandpa. Take a chill pill.
If you think Todd's joking, just look up the, gosh, what was it? I think it was the late 90s, and it was a school speech in Fairbanks.
Yeah, it was addressing high schoolers talking about the NEA. You know, the other evil, the other massive evil in this country, the National Endowment for the Arts. That was also the year, of course, that they were trying to gun down Big Bird, so...
One of our recurring segments.
Sure. Why not?
So I actually have a PSA. You heard it last week, but since it didn't record, I'm going to torture you again with it this week.
All right. Here we go.
Okay. So I am here to tell you that if you see a horse trailer on the road, you need to assume that there is a horse in that horse trailer, and you need to assume that we can't stop as fast as you can stop. So stop riding my ass. Drives me crazy. So I have a really good friend who does eventing, which those are all those beautiful horses that do the cross-country runs and jumps, and the riders look really cool in their fancy jodhpurs and coats, and I'm not nearly that spiffy. She was nearly taken out by somebody who does not know how to drive behind someone who is in a horse trailer, who's driving a horse trailer a couple of weeks ago. And it just made me crazy because I think about all of the assholes who drive so recklessly around me whenever I'm driving my horse trailer. People just pull out in front of you like you can stop as quickly as you can stop a little tiny car. People right. ride your tailgate like you're going to stop really quickly if you get up to a light or if you have to stop suddenly because of something that's come out in front of you. It's insane. So what I'm saying is this beautiful, giant, magnificent animal has cupcaked himself into this tiny trailer because he trusts me with his life. And I am asking you to slow your ass down and give us some space. We don't stop as fast as you think we do. And by the way, we will probably crush you. So stop already. So that's my PSA.
Absolutely. Absolutely agree with that. It's a good PSA.
It probably could have been more eloquently worded, but it just drives me nuts every spring and summer. And you know, I see it all the time on Facebook with my horse friends. Just another narrow miss because somebody was being crazy on the highway. So.
Right.
Anyway.
No, I think that's good. I think that's great, actually. So, listener feedback?
Okay, so you're probably going to have to do some editing because I have to go to my Facebook page and try to figure out how to find the listener feedback.
Hey, I'm going to take this opportunity to say, hey, if you haven't checked out our website, and that would be www.thisconversationrocks.com, check it out. We've given it a facelift. It actually does a few things now. If you want to leave us a message, please do so. In fact, actually, please leave us some messages on feedback on the website. To any of the posts that we get up and stuff, we try to post as often as we can. Could do more, but we're working on it. And also, take a look at us on Facebook at facebook.com/thisconversationrocks. Tell your friends, follow us. Tell your friends to follow us.
And I'm going to do the standard beg for please give us iTunes reviews. Good, bad, and different. We love to see your feedback on iTunes, and it brings attention to our podcast so more people find us. So you can review us on iTunes. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yep. And it's okay.
Okay, so I did, believe it or not, I found it faster this time. I'm getting better. So we got a new listener from the Because Show. Her name is Dawn, and she is a fan of The Walking Dead, and she is a nurse practitioner from Georgia. So you know that immediately makes her kindred with me. and she was saying that she really enjoyed H's for Haters, and she had a couple of comments about the shingles vaccine, and she wanted to make sure that people who think that they've never had the chicken pox, up to 90% of them probably actually did. So they should still go ahead and get the shingles vaccine, because a lot of people actually get really mild cases of the chicken pox and never realize that they had it. So go, 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 get your shingles vaccine. And she also wanted to say that she was incredibly sad about that case where the pharmacist refused to give the woman who was miscarrying that medication called misoprostol. And she said, I wonder if pharmacists question every man filling Viagra prescriptions to see if they're planning to use it only with their wives. So I thought that was a good observation.
And I think on the part that got dropped last week, I was talking about a couple of listeners down in Texas and my good friend Hannah. And then Terry, if you're still listening after the first couple that you listened to, welcome aboard. We're really glad to have you.
Right. And you said that person's beliefs are pretty different from ours, but he still liked it anyway, right?
Yeah. He thought that we were just trying to interject some common sense into the noise. So I thought that was the nicest thing anybody ever said about us.
Which was pretty cool. And then we also got a new listener from the Because Show. I'm hoping I can pull up his information. Gosh darn it. I think it actually ended up getting posted to the Because Show's shout out to us. And I'm going to maybe blow it. I'm going to try to find it through them. Anyway, I think his name was Benny, and he...
Okay, we're going with it. Benny, thanks.
I'm super sorry if I blew your name. Super nice review from him. And I also want to say that the last episode of the Because Show was really good. So they actually went to a couple of sex parties that were kind of titillating. So if you're a little bit pervy like me, there's just the right amount of perv in the last episode of the Because Show. I highly recommend listening to it.
What better recommendation can you possibly get?
I was going to say, what, you got nothing? You got nothing after that?
Oh, I got lots, but, you know. All right. So then moving on to Oh, By the Way.
Okay. You want to start or you want me to start?
Boy, I wish I could remember what I had before. It was pretty good. I'm just going to run through a couple of things real quick. I already mentioned the guy. Oh, by the way.
Oh, I can tell you what your oh, by the way was.
Okay.
George Zimmerman.
Was it Zimmerman?
It was Zimmerman.
Oh, that's right. I had this rant about what a fuckwad he is and how he keeps getting himself in the news. And now he's threatening to leave the state of Florida permanently. And Florida's like, thank God.
Because apparently it's Florida's fault.
Right, yeah. Because, you know, it's Florida's fault that he keeps getting in gunfights with people. That dude needs to be locked up.
No doubt.
That's really all there is to it. And I do believe that that was the oh, by the way. Also, oh, by the way, socialism and communism, for people who don't realize it, are two completely separate things.
In case you didn't get the joke a few minutes ago.
Oh, by the way. All right, what do you got?
So I actually thought this was really cool. I listened to a podcast called Dharma Punks NYC, hosted by a guy named Josh Korda. I actually send a lot of my patients there because he deals a lot with anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and he's really, really awesome. So again, that's Dharma Punks NYC, DHARMAPUNX, spelled kind of differently. The podcast that he sprang from is called Against the Stream, and it's hosted by Noah Levine, typically, although they have quite a few guest teachers. Anyway, this was posted to the Against the Stream Facebook page, and it says, study finds being exposed to Buddhist concepts reduces prejudice and increases pro-sociality. So basically, it's just a study of, it was a fairly small study, 355 people, so that's not huge, but it says that being exposed to words related to Buddhism could automatically activate pro-social behavior and tolerance, in particular among people with socio-cognitive open-mindedness. So basically, it's just kind of saying that exposure to Buddhist concepts make people more open-minded, which I thought was pretty cool. And it says, unlike Christian and other monotheistic religious systems that paradoxically seem to encourage not only pro-sociality but also prejudice, Buddhist ideas favor both pro-sociality and out-group tolerance, and these ideals seem particularly efficient in leading to action for people with relevant personality dispositions. So, I just, you know, I really think that you can ascribe to some of the Buddhist philosophy and some of the teachings without having to particularly embrace the religion, and I think that you can... Hang on.
Why are we listening to The Walking Dead?
You're listening to The Walking Dead because I'm getting a phone call, but I can, God. Because oh Mercury's in retrograde. You're listening to The Walking Dead because Mercury's in retrograde.
So I just got to ask, is that tuned to a specific person? Or is that just in general?
That's my general ringtone, and you can go ahead and leave this in so you can show everybody what a total geek that I am.
Oh, you know I'm going to.
So I'm on call.
What the hell is that noise?
I'm on call, so I had to have my phone on. That was not a call for a patient. That actually was my husband, who I'm going to call back in a few minutes here. Yes, I am a Walking Dead, a total geek.
and this podcast is more important than our personal lives.
And now I have to talk about the Mercury retrograde thing. So anyway, I just want to say Buddhism is really cool. Noah Levine and Josh Korda are really cool. And if you are suffering from anything remotely related to anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, or depression, please look at their podcasts, listen to their podcasts, because they've got some good stuff to offer. Noah Levine is also doing some great work in addiction and recovery. He just published a book called Refuge Recovery about a year ago that's really, really incredibly valuable. Now, on to the Mercury retrograde thing, because now I'm really going to rant. Let me tell you a little bit about Mercury in retrograde as my puppies bark at us. Mercury went into retrograde today. I am not typically into astrology. I typically think it's bullshit. I'm going to tell you, every time Mercury goes into retrograde, everything fucking falls apart. It started for me yesterday. So, I had one dog escaped three times. The third time she escaped, she beat the shit out of another one of my dogs, who now has five staples in her head. And she's limping and she's on antibiotics. I had another dog escape twice. I have a dog who's circling the drain, who's probably not going to be with us for very much longer. And my horse broke the brakes on my four-wheeler. And then my husband called me today as I was walking in to see a patient and said, one of the dogs bit me. And this was the first day of a month-long Mercury retrograde. So as my friend Deb Russell said, hold on to your pants.
Okay.
And now I sound like a complete and utter lunatic. I don't know, maybe we're going to have to go out on the dark side of the moon or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
I do have... go ahead.
So it's worth pointing out, of course, that Mercury retrograde is just an illusion. Mercury doesn't really go backwards. It just appears to us to be doing that.
Right.
And our good friend Neil deGrasse Tyson. Really doesn't think that it has any value.
Did you just look up something that Neil deGrasse Tyson says about Mercury retrogrades?
I'm getting a lot of things that are... figure that he's probably thinking that it's not really happening.
Yeah, I'm thinking he probably doesn't buy it. And I really don't, but man, makes for a great month's worth of conversation, especially when everything kind of crumbles apart like that all at once.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'll edit this down and clean it up, but yeah.
And by the way, if anybody has a lead on a new handbrake for a Suzuki Quad Runner, let me know.
You could leave that feedback at www.thisconversationrocks.com.
Or you could leave it in the form of a comment on our iTunes page and give us a review.
Absolutely. And as a last resort, you could just email that to us at thisconversationrocks@gmail.com.
Or if you can put it in 140 characters or less, you could send it to us at thisconvorocks.
That's on Twitter. Right. I forgot. I got the Twitter thing working last week. Yay, Twitter!
Todd has really been working hard on getting us, moving us way forward into the 21st century, so.
But then I just found out that, like, you know, all this stuff is just, like, for old fogies like us. Kids don't use any of this stuff.
I know. President Obama is now tweeting. I was like, wow, we're really lame.
Yeah. That's it. Twitter's over.
So I have our Neil Gaiman quote, which seems appropriate about socialism, fear of socialism, and Mercury retrogrades.
Hit us.
It's from the Graveyard Book, and the quote is, "Fear is contagious. You can catch it."
Excellent quote. Excellent quote.
All right, and on that note, I think we're done with healthcare finally, and hopefully this freaking recorded.
Yeah, I'm good on mine. I got 48 minutes.
Oh, let me check Audacity. Woo, I got it too.
There is no dark side in the moon, really.